أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد اللهم صل على محمد وأهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري وَحْلُ الْأُقْتَةً مِنْ لِسَانِ يَفْقَهُ قَوْلِ السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائك عليك مني سلام الله أبدا ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار ولا جعله الله آخر العهد مني لزيارتكم السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين. So dear brothers and sisters, it's an honor to be here and an honor to be with you. The Islamic New Year is now with us, and we are now going to remember, inshallah, the greatest sacrifice that ever took place in the history of man. As we learned from Imam al-Hasan alayhi salam, he said, La yawm ka yawmaka ya Aba Abdullah. There was no day ever like your day. This was the day when all of the works of all of the Anbiya was about to be lost. If it were not for the uprising of Imam Hussein and his stand, him against 30,000 people on that day, all of Islam, all of the works of all of the Anbiya would have been lost. So we want to remember that. We also want to remember that this was never just about Yazid at that time. If we look at the words of Imam Hussein, we see that there was a principle that he was acting on. A principle that applies even to today, even to now. So what was the principle? These are the words of Imam Hussein. He says, عَلَى الْإِسْلَامَ السَّلَامِ That Islam itself will be over, will be finished, if the Ummah is tried with a leader like Yazid. A leader like Yazid, not this person, that this person is important for me. If he was gone, the problems of the world will be solved. No. If the Ummah has a leader like Yazid, if there is a Taghut who is running the affairs of the Ummah, then Islam itself is lost. So, before I begin now, there was a suggestion, or it was mentioned to me, that hopefully we will get some volunteers to actually recite poetry for Imam al-Hussein. To say a few words and remember Imam al-Hussein, share our emotions about Imam al-Hussein, and not only collect from Imam al-Hussein from an intellectual point of view, but also from an emotional point of view. This is also very important for us. One of the trials that we have, now the English language is a little bit new for us, meaning that in our mother tongues, the nations that we came from, people are very much used to masaib, and they've got trigger words and certain masaib that we recite, and everybody cries and stuff like that. But in the English language, this is a new culture. We're developing this. What happens is, even in those cultures, previously, if we ask our forefathers, our grandfathers, even in those languages, masaib weren't natural. What do I mean by that? In the beginning, masaib would have been in Arabic, right? After that, then even in India and Pakistan, they were in Farsi. Even in India and Pakistan, and you can't do masaib in Urdu before. Then what happened was that people said, no, we'll start doing it in Urdu, and then Urdu became the language to recite it in, and it's going to come here to English. How will that happen when we start, all of us start to perform our responsibility? Which means there are brothers and sisters who are talented in all languages. Every language, you've got people who are talented. If we all start applying ourselves and trying to say that I would like to recite the Masayib of Imam al-Hussein, I would like to say some poetry for Imam al-Hussein, some of them will become classics the same way that they've done in previous languages, and it will really be beautiful. So I want to mention a story now. This is from Imam al-Sadiq, which accurately demonstrates this point. The guy who's telling the story says that I came into the presence of Imam Sadiq, salamullahi alayhi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. So he says that the Imam requested me to recite some poetry. So I recited. Then the Imam told me, no, not the way that you recited it. He said, recite the way that you recited when you're at the grave of Imam Hussein. When you're over that, okay, we're sitting, let's say Imam al-Mahdi was here, and you were told to recite poetry, you try and use your best etiquette, best words, these things, right? So this guy is there in the presence of his Imam, the Imam of his time. Now, how can I recite poetry? And the Imam tries to use the best words. Imam says, no, I don't want that. Recite for me, recite poetry for me, how you recite it. What do you say when you're over at the grave of Imam Hussein? So the poet, when he heard those instructions, he started to recite. Now what happened was that the Imam would also invite, this is again from Imam Asada, an example of many, that he would put up a curtain and they would invite the women of the household. They would be there behind the curtain. The Imam is there. The poet starts to recite. Of course, it becomes much more emotional then because the women are crying. Right? He says, when I recited the second time, the Imam was crying. The women were really crying. Right? Then the Imam said, hadith for him. He told him this, right? And this will, inshallah, increase us. Because the Imam said it again, telling him to do more and more. Then he said this thing for him. He says, Ya Aba Harun. The guy's name was Abu Harun. Man anshada fil Hussein alayhi salam. So whoever recites poetry about Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, fa abka ashra falahul jannah. Whoever, this is one of the ways the Ahlul Bayt made it easy for us to get into paradise. Whoever will recite poetry for Imam al-Hussein and make 10 people cry, falahul jannah. He says, then after that the Imam started to take away the numbers. Whoever makes 9, 8, up until he says, man anshada fil Hussein fa'abka wahida, whoever recites poetry and makes one person cry, right, falahul jannah. Then after that, the Imam got to the last part. He says, man dhakarahu fabaka, whoever remembers Imam al-Hussein and cries, falahul jannah. So what we're trying to do as this next generation of Muslims, people who are preparing the grounds for the return of the Imam, is that in our languages also, we need to have this poetry and masa'ib and this the thoughts and the emotions behind what happened to Imam al-Hussein. The mission and the cause and what happened and the duties, and also that emotional connection. We don't only want it to be an intellectual exercise. Only our duties, our wajibat, our instructions. That's all important. We definitely want to do that. Right? So that we're able to serve the Imam of the time, but that's not all it is. That emotional part is also supposed to be there. So inshallah that'll happen, and we'll be able to do it. The second point that I'd like to say is the idea of making sure that we never make the majalis of Imam al-Hussein and this powerful message, a message that was only about history. So we come in here and we recite and we feel terrible about something that happened in history and doesn't really have much to do with us right now. No, we want to make sure that we point out the Yazids and Shimmers of the time. The system of the Tawhut is still ruling right now. Israel, for instance, is a good example of Shimmer and Yazid. People would have done the exact same time. Her allies. These are examples. So what we want to do is we don't want these majalis to only be something that's historical. It happened a long time ago. I don't have taklif right now. No, right now I have taklif. Right now, every day is Karbala. Every day is Ashura. Every place is Karbala. For me, this is very real. This is right now. So that's two things that we want to keep in mind when we're doing these majalis. Now, the Ahlul Bayt, of course, they wanted it to be like that. I mentioned that hadith that was from Imam al-Hussein when he says that if the Ummah had a ruler mithli Yazid, like Yazid, now it was never about the person, about that system. Or another hadith where he says, man ra'a sultanan ja'iran, right? There's one hadith when the Imam is explaining why he's doing this. He says, whoever sees a tyrannical ruler. And then he starts to describe this ruler. Who considers what Allah has made halal, haram. Right? The haram, halal. He breaks the covenant of God. He acts and deals with the people with injustice. He starts describing what tawaghit are like. He says, this person has, their instructions are, he said, if this happens, whoever sees this and doesn't rise up against them, either with his actions or with his words, he says, then it's God's right to put that person in the same place. So was that for them? No, whoever sees Sultan and Ja'iran, it's the same ruling. It was never about something in history that didn't concern us and we're safe, all we have to do is cry. No, we're preparing ourselves for what the Imam's going to do. When the Imam comes back, what's he going to do? He's going to rule the world of the Tawaghit. He's going to establish the Wilayah of Allah. That's what we're trying to do. That's what it always was. It's always been relevant. Okay. Now, what we'd like to do now is to, because part of our majalis is, inshallah, for the idea of reminding ourselves of our practical responsibilities and what God wants from us right now. How can we improve ourselves? How can we be better soldiers of the Imam, better servants of God, better with our family, with our friends, right? Part of the majalis is for that. So we'd like to also go over, inshallah, Surah Yusuf. We'll go over part of Surah Yusuf for this reason. In Surah Yusuf, we've now gotten up to verse number 54. And we're going to use this to try and find some practical reminders. In verse number 54, before I recite the actual verse for you, let me tell you what the context is. Yusuf alayhi salam has been brought out of prison. In the prison, they went to Yusuf and they asked for the interpretation of that strange and amazing dream that the king had. Nobody else was able to solve it. Yusuf could. Yusuf goes over and he solves it. Not only that, he gives them a 15-year plan. He says, this is going to happen for you for 7 years. This will happen to you for another 7 years. Gives them a plan. They see this guy, whoever he is, he's a wonderful administrator. He has plans. The other thing that was interesting was that Yusuf alayhi salam didn't ask for any reward for this. Normally, if I knew there was something, I'm in prison. I'm in prison unjustly. The king is asking me to do him a big favor. I could easily use this as a bargaining chip, get out of prison, for instance. Yusuf goes over, he does all of that, and he doesn't ask for anything. They try and offer him a royal pardon afterwards. Yusuf refuses. So they say, bring Yusuf to me. And Yusuf is this guy, he's amazing as far as his looks. The hadith says that he was granted from the Prophet ﷺ. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. He says, "Utiya Yusuf shatr al husn wa nisf al akhar li baqin nas." So Yusuf alayhi salam was given half of the beauty of all of the people in the world. So you're coming in the presence of this individual who is confident, explaining, an excellent administrator, solved this wonderful problem, refused the royal pardon. Yusuf demanded, when they tried to free him, he said, "No, I want you to start an investigation. Why was I put into prison?" No other choice. You've got to investigate. They start to investigate and they see that the reason he was put into prison was because of these wonderful akhlaqi traits that he had. He was such a pure person. He refused to engage in an illegal relationship, even at the price of prison. At the price of giving up all of the dunya, he said no. And that's why. And then he was exonerated in a spectacular fashion. The wife of the Aziz, the other women of the, they come over and they say, "No, this guy never did anything wrong." So now, when the king sees this, right, this environment, this person refused under these circumstances, he was imprisoned. Then now we understand the context of the verse. Verse number 54. وَقَالَ الْمَلِكُ. So the king said, وَقَالَ الْمَلِكُ اُتُونِي بِهِ. Bring him into my presence. أَسْتَخْلِصْهُ لِنَفْسِي. I'm going to choose him for myself. فَلَمَّا كَلَّمَهُ. Once he spoke to Yusuf, he said, قَالَ إِنَّكَ الْيَوْمَ لَدَيْنَا مَكِينٌ أَمِينٌ. He said that from this day forward, you are makin, you have position, and you're honorable. So we're going to go over, of course, step by step and see what is it that we can get from the verse. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. What happens in the first part when he says istikhlas, that Yusuf So I'm going to choose him for myself. When you do istikhlas, it means that you make a person privy to all of your secrets. That person will become the number one in the kingdom. I'm choosing him. I'm going to do istikhlas for him, for myself. I'm going to choose him for myself. This person will become privy to all of the secrets in the kingdom. He will become my number one. Now, even before we move on, the first part, forget from the resource, is the power of God. That Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is so powerful that someone can be a slave, in prison, everything against them. The most powerful enemies you can imagine have a personal grudge against him, and Allah can make that person a king. Normally, if we just looked at the world from a worldly point of view, there is no way you should make it out of that. For Yusuf, here the king is choosing him. I want to do istikhlas of this person. I want him to become my number one. The second thing that we want to remind ourselves of is when someone does good work for us. Remember I said that Yusuf never asked for any reward? Even though he solved that problem for him and he did them such a big favor, he never asked the king for a reward, not once. Lesson for us though. Just because someone does us a favor and is kind to us and doesn't ask for anything, doesn't mean that we shouldn't notice. The king noticed. He said, oh no, somebody like this who did all of this for me, I'd like to serve that person, help that person, make them become my number one. I don't want to make it the case that just because he's not asking for anything, well, I also don't notice. Sometimes we're a little bit kinder to strangers than we are to our own family members. People that we know, it's a Muslim, isn't it? A family member, somebody, that's it. My child in my house. My wife, my husband, they do me a favor. They bring me, say, wife, bring me some water. Right? If it was a complete stranger who did that for me, oh, thank you. Thank you, sir. That was really kind of you. You bought coffee for me? Right? It's the wife, you know. Yeah. She ought to do, right? What are my wife for? Right? Sometimes we don't appreciate those who don't ask for anything. But for us, we see that the king did appreciate. Anyhow. The other thing that is once he had spoken to the king, once the king requested to actually speak with him, to conversate, he wanted to talk. And then once he had talked to him, he was like, no, this guy is definitely Makin. We're going to talk about what that means. We'll just lay it right now. You're going to have this position. And Amin, trustworthy. Okay. The king, what he did was, as soon as he's talking to this prophet of God, he's convinced of his personality and how wonderful he is. And that's the way it ought to be for any Muslim, for all of us. This is a prophet talking, a pagan talking to a prophet of God. And of course, it's natural that when he talks to a prophet of God, someone who's in the pinnacle of human excellence, he would be stunned, amazed, blown away. But for those of us who are trying to build up to come for the coming of the Imam, our character should also be like this. That when others interact with us, non-Muslims, that we invite them to the way of God without our tongues. There's a beautiful verse here in Surah Maryam when it's describing Hazrat Isa. Describing Hazrat Isa. This is what he says. So Surah 19, verse number 31. وَجَعَلَنِي Isa talking about himself, how Allah made him. وَجَعَلَنِي مُبَارَكًا أَيْنَمَا كُنْتِ He says, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made me somebody. Wherever I go, wherever I'm present, I'm mubarak and blessed. I'm beneficial, I'm helpful, I'm useful. So for the mu'mineen, wherever we are, wherever we're placed, whatever we're environment in, like Isa alayhi salam also, inshallah, mubarak. Right? The presence of a mu'min is something that wonderful. People have a conversation with the mu'min, blown away by the character of that believer. The other thing that's really important is the idea of giving important positions. This applies to us over here too. Giving important positions in the community to people that we've trusted and tried. If you noticed in this verse, the king, when did he say that you are Makin and Amin? It says after he spoke to him. So he had already heard these wonderful things. Yusuf is so beautiful or handsome. Yusuf knows the interpretation of dreams. Yusuf pass those examinations, Yusuf demanded that they exonerate him. I don't want a royal pardon. Still, he insisted on an interview. Let me talk to this guy one-on-one, and then let me bring him into the kingdom. And then he was convinced. Instead of being naive, Muslims aren't supposed to be naive, and especially when we're wanting to give somebody a position which affects others, we want to make sure we've definitely done our homework. Even when it comes to things, let's say positions in the masjid. Positions in the masjid, because that affects all of us now. Positions in the masjid, how is that going to affect the cause, the mission, the way that Islam goes, the direction that it's going to take? After testing the people, speaking to the people, the same process that we see here. So, as the king over there, when I said that word Amin and Makin, what happens, we learn from the tafsir, that both of these positions were what we call mutlaq, absolute. You are absolute, you have there is no one higher in the kingdom as far as position than you, Yusuf. No one who is more trustworthy than you. Absolute power under the king. Right? But that was after testing him and knowing that, no, this guy is somebody special. And the hadith tell us, they say, don't be impressed just by the amount of fasting and praying of a person. Because normally, when you and I, we want to judge other mu'mineen, normally we're trusting anyway, which is good, alhamdulillah, we trust. And normally we want to trust other mu'mineen and assume what's best, which is good, alhamdulillah. But how have the Ahlul Bayt taught us to be when we're going to give somebody a position, when we're going to really trust somebody with something which is important? The hadith says, don't look at their prayers and fasting. Other hadiths say, don't look at Hajj or even Salatul Layl. They say, look for two things. Test them when it comes to Sidqul Hadith wa Ada'ul Amana. Is the person truthworthy? Do they tell the truth? If they tell the truth, then that's a good sign. How are they with amanat and trust that are given to them? That's another good sign. Of course, for ourselves, when we hear these ahadith, we're not only thinking about testing others, what about ourselves? In addition to being practicing and praying and these things, could people say, could the imam say, when we were getting recommended, the imam wants us to be in a certain position, could our imam say that this is someone who has sidqul hadith? When they say that this is what happened. If there a trust is given to them, they will honor that trust under all circumstances. This is a beautiful story they say about the time of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa sallam. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Hare Hedri! During the time of the Holy Prophet, the mu'mineen had advanced to a place called Khaybar. And over there, they had surrounded the forts of the enemy and they were away from home. Naturally, when an army is invading, again, this is for the cause of Islam. The Muslims are invading? No, they can't invade. No, sometimes we do invade if it's for the sake of God. Relieve the oppressed or stop oppression. So they're over there. So they're away from home. Naturally, when you're away from home, your supplies start to run low. And the Muslims had reached a stage when they were eating, let's say, mules and horses. They were that hungry. Now a shepherd came out from the castle of the Yahud. And when he came, then he saw the Muslims and he wanted to talk about what Islam is. And the Prophet talked about what Islam is. And the shepherd was convinced about the reality of Islam. And then he said, you know what? I am now a Muslim. I'm with you guys. I'm with you. I see everybody's hungry here. I have all of these sheeps at my disposal. I'm a shepherd for the Yahud. I can give you, and the Muslims are struggling. I can give you all of these sheep. You're eating horses now, sheep. The Prophet said, no, in my religion, we don't do khiyana in the amana. Take those back. It's a sin in my religion. So the mu'min, who's trying to be mubarak wherever he is, if we're working or interacting or in school or dealing with others, this wonderful trait of amana has to be there for all of us. So amana and sidqul hadith. And the hadith tells us, the imam tells us that if we do end up not obeying these rules. Meaning the Ahlul Bayt have told us, before we give position to anyone, first to test them in these two areas. For I want to trust you. They say that if you don't do this from Imam Ali, if you do give, or if you do trust someone, before testing them, the hadith says that's weakness. We're on our own. Whatever happens next, we're on our own. We don't want to be too picky either, you know. Nobody's good enough. Everybody's the enemy. No, we don't be like that. We assume good, but the Ahlul Bayt have told us to look for those two traits. The other thing that's interesting, again, we get from this verse, is the idea that the Yusuf, alayhi salam, he was not from the nationality of the Egyptians, was he? Musa, alayhi salam, that lineage, his lineage from Ibrahim and from his, he wasn't from their nationality. But still, because of his honesty, because of his purity, because of his tahara, he rose to have a important position over there, to the extent that the king was ready to make him the number one under him. Sometimes for us as Shia, sometimes, because we have hadith that say that shaitan sets up traps in the dunya, especially for the Shia. Sometimes we find that we as Shia, we're facing tests and trials that normally we would say we shouldn't be facing. For instance, one of the things that sometimes we face, sometimes amongst us as Shia, is racism and nationalism. Racism and nationalism. Especially when it comes to marriage. Huh? Sometimes it happens. So what happens is, but we see the example that we see from the Quran and what's happening over there in the Quran is that the king realized somebody who's talented, who's righteous, who's doing the right thing, somebody who has these principles, he says, even the highest position can be given. It's about values, not where you're from. Not where you're from. One thing I do admire about this center is that, alhamdulillah, we've been able to maintain the center and hasn't fractured. Right? I'm sure you brothers and sisters are aware. And a lot of times, well, sometimes even the same ethnic community, right? We'll have several centers 100 feet from one another. Right? Because of our nafs and breaking up. Sometimes, again, those ethnic and religious divides, right? People go over and, no, these guys are like this, their food is like that, I don't want to be with these guys there. We see these things are backwards. They're wrong. Even the pagan king knew better than that. He saw that, no, Yusuf is somebody who's qualified. And we look for those qualifications and try and promote those who are qualified. And the next one is this. Let's make the story really personal now. The most important part of this whole story. Because we're trying to review this whole exercise. This is in order to prepare for the Imam of our time. The Imam who's watching us right now. The Imam who's watching and witnessing our gathering and the gatherings of the other Shia of Amirul Mu'mineen, wherever they are, as they try and prepare the world for the return of the Imam. We saw here that the king did istikhlas, chose Yusuf as his number one. The king in our story, brothers and sisters, is Imam al-Mahdi. We want to, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa Muhammad. We want to be Yusuf. We want the king of our time, the Mahdi, to choose us and do istikhlas of us. We want him to choose us to look in this crowd and say that, no, these individuals, they are special people. These are the people I want in my army to do istikhlas of us. So what we're trying to do is see, what can we do to be chosen by the Imam? Does the Imam choose people? Yes, I'm going to give you an example of that in Karbala. The Imam goes over and he chooses. What does he choose by? What's important to the Imam? What sifat, what characteristics must you and I have in order to be those people who are chosen by the Imam? Because obviously we haven't done enough. If the Imam's not here now, we haven't done enough. One of the most important traits that we can have, brothers and sisters, most important traits, and it's related to the event of Karbala, is the trait of basira. Basira and insight. Basira and insight. Some of those who ended up in the camp of Ibn Ziyad were people who were mu'mineen, believers, Muslims, but they did not have basira. The most important trait, brothers and sisters, that we need to have if we want to defend the religion is this trait of basira. And we'll talk about, inshallah, what that is. That's the most important trait that we have to have. Let's go back to the event of Karbala for a little bit. So by basira, we mean the ability to identify what our taklif is, what's the most important responsibility that we have, even if we're in a situation with conflicting taklif. Sometimes there's a situation where I have more than one taklif. What does Islam need right now? What's the most important thing? What's the best way to serve? Those who have basira, we'll see in Karbala, those who have basira can identify this. Those who don't have basira, no. They'll get lost. They won't be able to identify which taklif is most important and what they have to do. Let's go back to the words of Imam Hussein. We remember that the words of the Imam, he says that whoever sees a sultan who is an oppressor, whoever sees a sultan who's an oppressor, this person must rise up against that person either in words and actions, right? We read that. So everybody who was there at the time of Imam al-Hussein was supposed to do that taklif. It wasn't only the duty of Imam al-Hussein. Everybody was supposed to do that. The hadith of the Prophet. Whoever sees a sultan who's like this. The others didn't. There are a lot of people who didn't do that. They didn't have basira to be able to identify what is the greatest of all problems right now and how should that be identified. And those who didn't have basira, give you a little tough love from the Ahlul Bayt. A little tough love. Not for you guys, for myself. The hadith says this, is from Imam Ali. He said, whoever is not with us is against us. Whoever is not with the wali of his time is against us. If Ali is on one side and Muawiyah is on the other side, or Hussein's on one side and Yazid's not on the other side, and you're not on the camp of Hussein for whatever reason, I'm not on the camp of Imam al-Hussein, I haven't taken sides, I'm neutral. Whoever's not with us is against us. Tough love. So the idea, meaning I'm part of the problem. I'm not part of the solution, definitely. I haven't come, I haven't served. I couldn't identify what my taklif was. I didn't do it. So what happens is, there were some people who had love of Islam. Then and now. Love of Islam. Even love of Ahlul Bayt. But still they weren't able to determine what was most important at that time. There were people, and you remember the stories where people would tell the Imam, no, don't go over to Karbala, preserve yourself, save yourself. Why go over to a tyrant like Yazid? He's going to slaughter you. Go to Yemen, you've got people over there. If you stay alive, if Imam Hussein stays alive, how many hadith can he share? How many ayat, right? How many people can he teach about namaz and fasting? And right? There's a lot you could do if you just stay alive. Why there? Why now? There were important people who told Imam Hussein he shouldn't be doing what he did. I'm going to mention some names too. Some names of people. But they were important individuals who were Muslims. It wasn't all, let's say, cowardice. It might have been other things. That they weren't able to determine their taklif at the moment. Because brothers and sisters, in order to be able to serve the Imam of the time accurately, we have to have that basira and recognize moments. What do I need to do right now? We're going to talk about how also. What do I need to do right now in order to serve? What does Islam need and what's most important to Islam at the moment? So, one example. Remember the Tawabin? The Tawabin, right? Shias of Amir al-Mu'mineen. People who later were willing to sacrifice themselves for Imam. They died, they became shaheed, inshallah, they're in paradise. When Muslim came to Kufa, and the call was made, and the time was to act, they said no. Right? They didn't join. Then later on, they went over, they joined and became shaheed, and inshallah, they go to paradise. But if the Tawabin had come at the time of Muslim, history could have been changed. We might get a chance to talk a little bit about that. Meaning that although the Imam knew what was going to happen, okay, it was not the case that history couldn't have been different. If certain people had done their responsibility, if they had had basira, the course of history could have been changed. Even if just the 4,000 Tawabin, if they had just recognized their taqlid at that time and taken over that town instead of Ibn Ziyad and were waiting for the Imam, even just them. So what happened though was that the Imam had basira. His companions had basira. Zainab salamullahi alayha had basira. Her husband didn't have basira. Abdullah bin Ja'far, the husband of Zainab, he didn't recognize what his responsibility was. He didn't come out there. He didn't support. There were others, Abdullah bin Abbas. People who were, they're Muslims, they know about Islam, but they abandoned Quran and Natiq. They couldn't identify their taklif. Zainab, not only did she have basira, not only did she come, she also took her sons. One might be a brave person. I'm willing to risk everything. I'll do whatever Islam takes. I'll go over whatever happens to me in the way of Allah is okay. But am I willing to bring others into the battlefield also? I leave my children here. Their husband is, they'll grow up, they'll have a happy life. Not saying that. Islam needs everybody. Y'all come. Your father doesn't come. It's okay, you come. So Zainab salamu alayhi was like this. Basira, being able to identify what my taklif is at the time, do it and even encourage others to do it. Even if others are telling me no, that's not right. It's not necessary. You don't need to sacrifice yourself. So, again, when we're talking about basira and finding out what the enemies of Islam are doing and what are the problems and what are the issues, both locally and globally, and who the enemies of Islam are, we don't want to be people who, again, they're very much religiously motivated, right? And until they hear about the enemies of Islam, so they'll be like, yeah, you know, those Wahhabis, for instance, those people who are in the Taliban and the guys in Syria and stuff like that. And they're angry at the puppet and they forget the puppet master. Who created the Taliban? Who created Al-Qaeda? So the person with basira is able to identify, no, okay, well, what's happening now? Where's the direction? What's going on? What should I be doing? So basira, if we want to, what is this basira? Basira is being able to identify. How do we get this? One of the things that we have to train ourselves, I'll speak to myself first, then you, to train ourselves to do is to think about what our responsibilities are and then choose after thinking. Of course, we have certain times where we refer to the alim and we find out what it is, and I mentioned the other day, it doesn't mean that I will think and I will find out what the ahkam al-shar'i are. Right? Is this halal or haram? Let me think about it. No, it'll make us like Abu Huraira. No, not supposed to do that. Taklif, we find out these things that way. But a lot of times in the taklif that we have in everyday life, right, where sometimes we come across conflicting taklif, those who think and sincerely want from God guidance, God guides them. Let me give you a hadith about it. So how can I gain basira? Hadith. The hadith says this. Whoever man amila, whoever acts based on what they know, warathahullah, Allah will put at the disposal of this person ma la ya'lam. So how do I come to understand what my taklif is in any given scenario? What does Islam need from me right now as a ummah? I get that by thinking carefully, acting on what I know, and God will give me that knowledge. We have another hadith again describing what the basir is like, that encouragement to think. So this is from Imam Ali alayhi salam. صلوا على محمد وعلى محمد. He says, al-basir, the person who has basira, is the person who thinks, who sees, and nadara fa'absara. He looks and then he sees. Sami'a, he hears, fatafakkara. He hears and then he thinks. So the person who has this basira is the person who's not superficial. They're really looking for guidance in any particular area. What is it that our center, this is our corner of the earth. This is our chance to serve the Imam. What is it that we need over here most? How can we best serve Islam right here? What about my personal life? People at Basira, they like this in their personal lives. In my personal life, when I'm dealing with my spouse, when I'm dealing with my children, right? The person who's really looking to say, well, what is my taklif? What is my duty? What does God want from me? I'm looking for inspiration. Those who are sincere, whoever acts on what they know, warathahullah, Allah will put at his disposal, ma la ya'la. So basira was to know what our taklif is, and how I get that is by acting. So that's what we actually have to have. There's a verse of the Quran that talks about this. This is a divine gift, a divine promise and a divine gift. So if we refer to Surah Al-Hadid, there's a verse over there. Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu, O you who believe, ittaqullah. It's interesting. O you who believe, so you already have iman, have taqwa. Wa aminu, and have iman. So iman on top of iman. Wa aminu bi rasulih. يُعْتِكُمْ كِفْلَيْنِ مِنْ رَحْمَتِهِ. Allah will give you two shares of His mercy. وَيَجْعَلْ لَكُمْ نُورًا تَمْشُونَ بِهِ. God will give you a light and you can walk with that light. You'll know what your taklif is. God will give you that light and you'll walk with it. Now, when we look over there in the verses of the Holy Quran, in the tafasir, they explain to us, they say that a person who's given this, what happens? They say when they have the second request for iman, aminu bi rasulih, those of you who believe in his prophet, they say that, this is from Allah Ta'ala, he says in two areas you're supposed to believe in the prophet. So one of them are those instructions that he gives you directly from God. The prophet, go over and tell us what's in the Quran. They say the second area where the prophet would give us instructions would be when it came to him implementing his own wilaya. The instructions that the Prophet would give when it came to the mu'mineen and their personal lives. And that area there had to be complete submission to the Prophet. So the mu'min, the true mu'mineen, were like that. So that is the highest level of faith, meaning one can get to this trait that we all need to be able to serve the cause, to have that basira, and then we'll be much more useful to the cause. I mentioned, inshallah, now we'll go to Karbala. So I mentioned that there is, the Imam sometimes chooses people. The Imam sometimes chooses people, and this choosing of the Imam takes place, and it took place even in the place of Karbala. Now, brothers and sisters, let me read you a few hadith which are talking about the rewards of crying for Imam al-Hussein. If we can kill this light here, then this will be very good. The Prophet is telling Fatima to Zahra salamullahi alayhi, he says, فَإِذَا كَانَ الْقِيَامَةِ, on the day of judgment, he says, تَشْفَعِينَ أَنْتِ لِلنِّسَى, he says, those women who cried for Imam al-Hussein, on that day you will do shafa'ah for these women. وَأَنَا أَشْفَعُ لِلرِّجَالِ, and I will do shafa'ah for the men. وَكُلُّ مَنْ بَقَى مِنْهُمْ عَلَى مَصَابِ الْحُسَيْنِ أَخَذْنَا بِيَدِهِ وَأَدْخَلْنَاهُ الْجَنَّةِ. If there's any man and woman who cried for the masaib of Imam al-Hussein, we will take them by the hand and we will bring them to paradise. In another hadith, Imam Sadat salamu alayhi says, لِكُلِّ شَيْءٍ ثَوَابٍ, for
for everything,
there's thawab.
He says, إِلَّا أَدَّمْعَ فِينَا, except the thawab for crying in us, for crying on us. If anyone can cry, even a tear, for Imam al-Hussein, then there is the reward for that is unlimited. So is it possible for the Imam to pick someone out of the crowd? Yes. The Imam can do and does istikhlas of individuals. Our Imam at that time, Imam al-Hussein, did that. He did that to Zuhair bin Qayn. He picked him out of the crowd. Zuhair bin Qayn was an individual who wasn't even trying to meet the Imam of his time. He was traveling, and he was traveling in the same direction as the Imam of his time, but he would deliberately try to move and set up camp so that he wouldn't have to interact with his Imam. But the Imam saw some good traits in him. Zuhair had something special in him, and the Imam went over and he sent his messenger to Zuhair. Zuhair's, and they describe the situation, they say that when the messenger came over, Zuhair was eating his food and he was so shocked. It was as if birds had landed on their heads. They didn't know what to do. And then the wife of Zuhair said that the son of the daughter of Fatima comes to you, the son of the daughter of the Prophet comes to you, and he asks you to come and you refuse? Some women are like that. They make their husbands Husseini. Zuhair, when he heard that, he got up and he went. And we don't know what transpired over there. All we know is that when Zuhair came back, his face is bright. He's happy. Then what happened, though, is he told his wife, he said, that, look, I'm going to divorce you. I don't want anything bad to happen to you. Perhaps Zuhair had guessed what was going to happen to the women of al-Hussein. That an army of 30,000 people, when it meets a tiny army like this, what's going to happen to those women and children? He said, I don't want anything bad to happen to you. I divorce you, you go back. They said when the woman heard that he was the reason for him being able to go and meet Imam Hussein, she was the reason for him to get that tawfiq, but he's being sent away. فَقَامَتْ إِلَيْهِ, the woman stood up and she walked over towards him. وَبَكَتْ, she started crying. I'm not going to be able to be there for Imam Hussein. I can't be with those women. She started crying. وَوَدَعَتْهُ, she went over, she hugged him. وَقَالَتْ, she said, may Allah be your help and assistance. Allah give you what's best. I have one request for you. أَسْأَلُكَ أَن تَذْكُرَنِي فِي الْقِيَامَةِ عِنْدَ جَدِّ الْحُسَيْنِ, I ask you to go over and remember me. When you meet the Prophet on the Day of Judgment, please you remember me. Now what happens when the Imam chooses you, when this istikhlas takes place, when the Imam chooses you? Zuhair became someone who had a position with Imam al-Hussein. He was one of the people, others, many tried to speak out. Imam Hussein sometimes would politely tell some people, you don't need to speak, it's not your takhlif. But Zuhair, no, he went and he spoke and the Imam was happy with what he had to say. He went over, they taunted him also. Zuhair spoke up also on the day when the Imam, the tent was there, and the Imam told everybody to go over and leave. You don't need to stay with me. They're only after me. ثُمَّ قَامَ زُهَيْر بِنْ أَلْقَيْنِ, Zuhair stood up. He says, وَاللَّهُ يَبْنَ رَسُولَ اللَّهِ لَوَدَدْتُ أَنِّي قُتِلْتَ ثُمَّ نُشِرْتُ أَلْفَ مَرَّةٍ, he says that I wish that I was killed and I was scattered, raised back to life. Even if this happened 1,000 times, and I could ward off death from you and these people. He was part of that regiment that even fought off Shimr. When Shimr attacked the tents, he did that. He fought him off. He was one of the people who had the honor of standing in front of his Imam when he made Salah. When it finally came time for Zuhair to sacrifice himself, Zuhair left the presence of his Imam. He came over and he tapped his Imam on his shoulder and he went forward to fight. They say he killed 120 of the enemy before finally he was cut down and martyred. And when he died, perhaps in his last breath, is when the Imam came over and he started to pray over him. So he ended in that way. But Imam Hussein didn't have anybody to pray over him. When Shimr was sitting on his chest, the Imam didn't have anyone to pray over him. We ask Allah by the right of Muhammad wa ala Muhammad to forgive all of us and to make us the true soldiers of the Imam of the time. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.